Hey, it's Drex from This Week Health Cyber and Risk Community, and I want to invite you to our next webinar. It's going to focus on what else? Defending health data. I'll be chatting with experts from Rubrik and Microsoft. Register right now at thisweekhealth.com/rubrikwebinar. That's all one string, R-U-B-R-I-K webinar, thisweekhealth.com/rubrikwebinar. See you online soon.
Today on Keynote.
We just really have to look at technology with an even more critical eye than perhaps we have historically. Understanding the value and potential ROI are decision points, but they really haven't always been as emphasized as they are now.
My name is Bill Russell. I'm a former CIO for a 16 hospital system and creator of This Week Health, where we are dedicated to transforming healthcare one connection at a time. Our keynote show is designed to share conference-level value with you every week. Today's episode is sponsored by Quantum Health, Gordian, Dr. First, Gozio Health, Artisite, Zscaler, Nuance, CDW, and Airwaves. Now, let's jump right into the episode. All right, it's Keynote, and today we're joined by Craig Kwiatkowski with Cedars-Sinai. Craig, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Bill. Great to be here.
How long has it been? How long have you been in the chair of the CIO?
Officially, about 2 years coming up, I think, next month. And I guess maybe unofficially, close to 3 years, sort of as the interim role leading up to the formal appointment.
But you were at Cedars for a while before that, right?
Yeah, I've been at Cedars 15 years now. And so the last three of which has been in the CIO seat. And then I guess, what, 3 or 4 years before that was in vice president over really our application portfolio and then a number of other roles prior to that.
All right. So you're now a seasoned veteran. I'm going to throw out the easy questions. We're going to go straight for the harder questions.
All right. Let me sit up straight in my chair then.
Take a little sip of the coffee that's there and keep going. All right. Let's look back at 23. Let's start there. What are some of the most significant technology initiatives at Cedars and how have they impacted patient care in 2023?
Yeah. Thanks, Bill. I think the biggest thing, at least in terms of a significant achievement for the organization in terms of breadth and depth of impact across our campus, touching literally every single one of our nearly 17,000 employees, was installation of a new ERP platform. And like most organizations, we've spent the better part of the last, 10, 15 years digitizing medical records and building out advanced clinical tools. To some degree, that came at the expense of less focus on our administrative areas, quite candidly, or the back office, as we sometimes call it. And so these functions, finance, supply chain, HR, payroll, grants management, scheduling, timekeeping, critical to the operation of an organization such as us and really any complicated organization. I think they really haven't gotten their due until more recently. And so I guess they're not always sexy topics. Who wants to talk about chart of accounts or invoice routing or approval hierarchies or supply chain match exceptions. But I guess particularly in healthcare, those topics don't really compare against other clinical kind of delivery topics that tend to be more visible. But we just had an obligation to fix those things and bring them current. We'd been using outdated legacy systems for far too long. I'm really happy to share that we went live over the holidays, big bang for all of those tools I mentioned. Risks being a little bit of a nail biter when you have payroll and supply chain involved. We have to continue to feed the hospital with supply chain. And even though there's always a workaround there, you can just pick up the phone and place an order. But with payroll in particular, we didn't have as much margin for error. And so we absolutely need to pay our folks and do it correctly. And so we tested the heck out of everything and we had a great outcome. And I think what's interesting, Bill, is I do find it fascinating that of all of the absolutely incredible things we've done with technology over the years, some of which have unimaginable complexity. You know, I think back to the infusion pump integration we did as an example, where 1/1000th of a milliliter could be the difference between the right medication dose and an error that can cause patient harm. Yet it turns out there's a lot of complexities in payroll too. And as I said, we tested the heck out of it, ran, I can't remember how many payroll parallel cycles, and it was a good outcome. And I guess I should add, before I stop rambling, this is well beyond a technology initiative. This was really a business transformation project. It was an opportunity for us to take a fresh look at the people and the process components which is probably 80, 90% of really what we needed to focus on. And again, I'm really happy that we've moved it forward and given our staff a contemporary tool that they deserve.
It's interesting. We just had a 229 project meeting, a bunch of CIOs in the room, and one of the partners grabbed me afterwards and said, it struck me that really only half the time did we talk about technology. Like the other half of the time, we were talking about a lot of really intricate healthcare kind of things, supply chain kind of things and whatnot. I'm like, yeah, I think that's the role now, is to really understand those aspects of the business and integration of that, getting the data to flow, getting processes right across the system. That's as much of a conversation they're looking to someone like you to have as it used to be. Tell us about the data center.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really, I think the project candidly started out with kind of a more technology focus, but we quickly really realized everything that you just described, which is, this is an amazing opportunity to really take a look at the way in which we run our operations and the efficiencies that we might gain. And moving from paper and Excel spreadsheets in some cases to real-time data and information and mobile capabilities, yeah, there's technology enablers there, but it's the fundamental transformation of the way people work. And that was key.
One of the challenges when we went to the EHR was that in some health systems, we took our clinical processes and like married them to the technology, like we changed them to the technology. Do you find that same thing sort of happens here, or is there give and take as you're doing an ERP system? Is it a little different?
There's similarities. It's trying to, I think, free people's minds a little bit from thinking about how do we take our paper-driven process or our more manual-driven process or spreadsheet-driven process and move this like for like into a new system. And that's just not the way that we should really think about things. It's more oriented towards workflow orientation. What is the workflow here? What are the outcomes of this workflow? What are the requirements? And how does this sit within the sort of construct or the confines of the technology? And we, I guess, have the benefit of not being the first people to do this within these technology solutions within ERP. And so you can take a look at what have others done to sort of incorporate these workflows into the solution. And we leaned on that a bit. Just what are the leading practices out there? And let's figure out why the leading practice wouldn't work for us, if there was a reason why, and then work around it. But I think it's a little bit of both.
It's so interesting. When I think of Cedars, I think of early adopter, pushing the envelope and those kinds of things. But in this one case, doing the ERP solution in 2023, kind of a late adopter in terms of bringing that all under one solution.
Yeah, and I think it's for the reasons I said. I think we've built world-class capabilities in clinical and related domains, and we haven't really given the time and attention to the back office that we needed. And we had sort of dabbled in some of these areas over the years, trying to move forward with some updates to HR systems. But as we got further along, we realized, you know what, we should just do all of this at once, one big swoop. Also unique for Cedars is to sort of do a big bang approach to a technology install. I think we implemented Epic probably over 7 years, module by module. And this really was everything at once, as I said, within the ERP platform.
So, Craig, that's what you did last year, or the team did last year. So that's in the past. Congratulations. That's all well and good. It's like, what have you done for me lately?
Can we celebrate it a little bit longer or no?
All right, we can celebrate. That actually is a huge accomplishment. The ERP is a significant accomplishment. But I do want to look forward as we move into 2024. What are some of the key projects on deck for Cedars?
Yeah, I think, well, there's probably some optimization to be had over in that space as well. But I think some of the other areas that we're looking at as we move into 24 are really focusing on our people. So how can we improve things for our patients and our caregivers? And so I guess some examples of that, ambient listening and documentation. So we're, like many organizations, I think now piloting these solutions and looking for ways to take pressure off of our physicians and other caregivers. We're taking a look at and doing some vendor selection around remote monitoring, so virtual sitters and virtual nursing, to more efficiently use those resources and some of those technology capabilities to identify things sooner in the room with cameras and so forth. We're expanding digital scheduling, things like we have a virtual second opinion solution, as well as a solution we call CS Connect that we've implemented last year, but are looking to grow this year, as well as optimizing our access tools for self-scheduling, which continues to be a journey for us. We have a home care program that we're going to be rolling out in the next few months. That's exciting to see, probably a slow roll, just given some of the complexity there in our geography here in LA. We've got a bunch of work happening in patient flow and capacity optimization, taking a fresh look at those capabilities. We are bursting at the seams here in our physical space and need to continue to solve for some of those challenges. And I think supporting additional organizational growth, we're focusing on planning for our new hospital in Marina Del Rey. And then I think really a fundamental for us moving forward is cost optimization and application rationalization. So in addition to all the new shiny stuff, what are the ways in which we're taking a look at what we've got, our technical debt and applications that we need to build some muscle memory and just muscle around ongoing evaluation of those life cycles.
The CS Connect is interesting to me. I was around working with you guys a long time ago, actually, around that platform and scheduling. I want to touch on CS Connect. So CS Connect, is that built on the foundation of MyChart, or is that just an instance of MyChart for you guys?
Yeah, it's beyond the MyChart portal. And so CS Connect, I guess we're calling it a virtual healthcare option. So with physicians available 24/7 for urgent issues, same day appointments, and even some primary care needs. And so it's intended, I guess the genesis of it was intended to help alleviate capacity and access pressures in our brick and mortar locations. So primary care and urgent care in particular, with an emphasis, as we say, on meeting patients where they are anytime, day and night, they need healthcare. This is available. And I guess it has the added benefit of making things easier for physicians. And so we worked with K-Health, which was a startup of sorts that developed the AI technology that Cedars-Sinai and sort of worked with them on and then co-built in an app experience. And I guess maybe just to describe, the workflow starts with an AI-enabled chat question and answer workflow that gathers relevant health details and symptoms from a patient to assess sort of what they're engaging about, what's their medical concern or their need. Patients get then sort of after they've answered question, they get information about a potential diagnosis. There's an 80% chance you have a sinus infection. There's a 20% chance you have cold, something else. And then they choose whether or not they'd like a real-time video visit with a physician, which we encourage patients to do, either scheduled right then or occurring right then or scheduled into the future. And so if they choose a video visit, all that intake information that was gathered during the chat session is assimilated and presented to the physician on the back end. So the physician has that information to more seamlessly sort of initiate a conversation with the patient with the benefit of all of that information gathered. We're, I guess, a few months, so it started in October, into the general availability of that. And the response has really been positive so far. And so we're excited to see that continue to grow and expand. Physicians like it because it makes their job a little bit easier and having gathered all that information. We're hearing from a patient experience standpoint, the patients like it in that for the similar reason, they don't sort of have to repeat themselves as much because the physicians have that information. And I think the general look and feel and workflow is pretty easy to navigate. So we're proud of the app experience that's been developed. And there's, of course, always things that we're looking to enhance and improve upon. But again, while it's relatively early, we think the early results look good. And we're excited to continue to expand.
Is it a command center kind of model where you have the primary care physicians and the critical care physicians in a central location where they're handling those calls?
Some of them are located centrally, but there's also physicians who work remotely and they log in and do their shift or some portion of their shift from wherever they happen to be.
Is this available for the general public? Like, would you put this up on a billboard and anybody can get to it? Or is this the kind of thing that they need to have a login of some kind in order to access this?
No, it's available generally. Anybody can access it via billboard initiated.
Well, I just know how LA traffic, you get so much time to sit there
a
and
lot
read
of
the
time to,
board.
absolutely. There's a lot of time to sit and think and look at the surroundings for sure. But yeah, we were advertising broadly. Effectively, anybody in the state of California could use it. So whether you're local within LA or you're in some other region, anybody can use it. You do not have to be a Cedars-Sinai patient, an existing patient, in order to use it. In fact, we're seeing a fair uptake of net new patients, which is a nice benefit of the solution. So whether you're a new patient or an existing patient, the workflow is similar. If you're an existing patient, there's a step in there to identity match you, basically, sort of almost like with a clear workflow where you take a picture of your ID and it matches you to an existing patient record. And then that information also gets pulled in for the physician visit. So they have all of your background information in addition to the information you provided up front and the sort of the Q&A portion of the interaction.
Cedars has seen pretty significant growth over the last 5-6 years, a couple of acquisitions, a couple of strategic partnerships, whatnot. Talk a little bit about the growth and what that means from a technology project standpoint.
There's a lot more to do, I think, is the punchline. But the growth, I think it started probably about a decade ago. Our first affiliation was with Marina Del Rey Hospital, I think close to 10 years ago, or give or take. Marina Del Rey Hospital has about 130 beds. We're in the process of actually building a new hospital tower on that site with a planned completion in late 2026. We affiliated with, I think in sequence, next affiliated with Torrance Memorial Hospital in, I think, 2018. That has about 400 beds. And then I think most recently in 2021, we affiliated with Huntington Health over in Pasadena. That has about 600 beds. So all in all, as a health system, we have about 2,000 beds that we have oversight or access to. And then we also have a pretty significant ambulatory footprint that's grown over that time period, dozens and dozens of primary urgent care and specialty locations across LA and out into the valleys. And I think we've talked about before, Bill, we've got a number of joint ventures, Providence and others. And so all of that keeps us busy. I think in November of, I guess a year ago, November, we had a major technology assimilation with Huntington, moving their systems onto sort of our enterprise solutions, including Epic, and I think it was 173 other application systems that we either moved over to enterprise solution or had a net new integration within Epic. And so it's just a lot of technology, moving pieces and parts. A lot of it is the fundamental stuff, sort of the bottom of the Maslow hierarchy of needs pyramid, network, infrastructure, telecom, all of those things. And then we build upon that, of course, with more advanced capabilities.
One of the things you get to do is be a part of a construction project. Those are interesting. I've talked to a couple of CIOs that have the opportunity to do that. It's a challenging puzzle to look at the technology that's available today and imagine this is what it's available today, but we have to build for the next 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 years in this building. What's that project like?
I find it interesting and really fascinating to watch as well, particularly the project management of just standing a building up, I think is interesting. And I try to sometimes compare that to the way in which we run technology projects. And man, those guys do not miss deadlines. So this thing is moving and it's on a fast moving train. But and it's fun just to watch the construction, quite honestly. It's, you know, you go over there and I think it's about, we're building, I think it's a 9 or a 10 story tower and the steel's going up. It's currently about 5 stories high and it's just fun to watch.
Do they seek out your thoughts and ideas, Cat 6, Cat 6E, wireless? I mean, are you involved in those discussions?
Yeah, I'm not personally, of course, but the folks who are closest to that within our teams, absolutely, yeah, they do work with the architects and there's sort of points of no return after which no changes can be made once some pieces of structural steel or walls start going up. And if your lines are in there, great. If they're not, it's something we'd have to come back to with a change order. But yeah, that's all part of the early planning. And I think as you alluded to, it's a bit of future proofing. And so wiring the heck out of the building so that we have access points everywhere we could possibly need them. Anticipation of not really knowing where everything's going to go in 3 years, let alone within 15 to 20 years. And so it's sort of a fun experiment, but it should be a really beautiful building. There's still some fine tuning to do on the specific specialty programs that are going to go in there, but it should be a great space. Interestingly, Marina Del Rey is, I think, actually the closest hospital to LAX. So if you ever have, God forbid, a health event or an issue of X, that's where you'd probably be going. And it'll be a really nice thing for the community in that space to have the new facility. I think the way in which we're trying to orient the technology thinking for the building is really starting with overall vision for the facility, that it's intelligent, it's human-centered, it's reliable, sustainable, data-driven, all of those things. And from a technology standpoint, it's all of what I mentioned. It's having the right infrastructure in place to future-proof it. And then it's really defining goals with our operational and service line leaders about the programs they're implementing, what they want from patient experience, staff experience, efficiency. There's well-being opportunities for providers and caregivers. There's capacity and flow considerations that we need to take into account. And then we're trying to tie those goals. There's work groups and sort of other governance in place to potential solutions and making bets on some solutions that have, in some cases, some maturity to do or maturing to do. So for example, the smart room sort of the future, what does that mean? And what does it look like in 3 to 5 years? And so we have a smart room focus group getting into the minutiae of workstation to design, door displays, digital whiteboards, entertainment options, environmental controls, all the stuff that you can imagine needs to be in the room. And it's fun. It's one of the more fun areas that I think our teams are super excited about. That's cool, sort of cutting edge tech. We're actually even, we're building a patient room simulation, a wet lab of sorts, sort of right in one of the available offices across the hall from me here. And so we have a test area to pilot these things internally and test them out before we actually deploy it in new physical space. And so that's been fun. And there's a lot of opportunity there to fiddle with new technology and toys. And we've also got some groups looking at command center and remote monitoring solutions. Where are those going to be stationed within the organization? Similar to what you asked earlier, what would that look like to have a centralized pool of resources for virtual sitters, for virtual nursing, telemedicine, and all of that? We've got groups focused on wayfinding and situational awareness and sensing solutions that are really what we're going to begin to see in the next few years. So there's mobile work groups, digital signage. So again, we're just trying to organize everything into the right swim lanes and areas to partner with the right operational resources to make the right choices or the choices and the bets we think are going to come true within 3 years, and then set ourselves up for success in years 5, 10, 15 from an infrastructure standpoint.
In the ever-evolving world of health IT, staying updated isn't just an option, it's essential. Welcome to This Week Health, your daily dose of news, podcasts, and expert commentary designed specifically for healthcare professionals like yourself. Discover the future of health IT news with This Week Health. Our new news aggregation process brings you the most relevant handpicked stories from the world of health IT, curated by experts, summarized for clarity, and delivered directly to you. No more sifting through irrelevant news, just pure focused content to keep you informed and ahead. Don't be left behind. Start your day with insight at the intersection of technology and healthcare. This Week Health, where information inspires innovation. That's the fun thing. I think I'm going to move to the less sexy topic, which is operational excellence and those kind of things. One of the things that is a conversation that keeps coming up over and over again is application rationalization. I'm sure Cedars doesn't have this problem, but a lot of health systems have a lot of applications that have grown over time, and that's not even counting the instances of those applications. You could have multiple instances of those same applications. What is your approach? How does Cedars approach, first of all, the philosophy around bringing new applications into the environment and then rationalizing those some applications out of the environment?
Yeah, it's a great question, Bill, and it's something I think we're beginning to build a program around, not just application rationalization, but more of a lifecycle approach. And candidly, we haven't really had this historically. I think even the words application rationalization, when you say those words to people outside of IT, they tend to look at you with a little sort of a confused face, not really understanding what that means. And so I think we're finding it involves some explanation and education to counterparts around the organization, tying together the concepts of platforms, of enterprise solutions, and technical debt. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, we did a bunch of this just sort of, I don't know, hate to say, but organically. It happened as a consequence of the affiliation work we did with Huntington, moving 170 some systems and sort of rationalizing those against our baseline of enterprise solutions. And that was a bolus of work. And now we're going back to look at our baseline. And so the way in which we're trying to do that is take a look at what systems we have, where do we have overlap, what's adoption like in some cases for systems that have been around for a while, are they being used? Are they being used in the way that matches the expected use and the value proposition for those solutions? What risks exist with those solutions that haven't been evaluated in a while? How hard are they to maintain and support and so forth? So there's a number of sort of factors that are going into the calculus of taking a look at a short list of applications to start with and then growing from there. In some cases, it's looking at bolt-on systems that Epic now has a module for that didn't exist previously. And so Epic continues to, of course, build upon their platform. And there's ways in which we can take advantage of that to move away from decisions that we had made years ago based on the then available technology. And so as subjective, I guess, as the process may be, we're leaning in as best we can to a scoring matrix organized around, again, as you said, Bill, this isn't particularly sexy. Scoring matrix is fascinating. Around some of the factors I mentioned to sort of risk stratify and help us make decisions together. Our plan is to take findings and recommendations through stakeholder and governance groups and discuss how we approach those identified opportunities. I'm excited to see how it evolves. And it ties to the other part of your question, how do you make decisions on these things to begin with? Again, not particularly sexy, but in some cases it's RFIs and solution identification, ideally looking for solutions that solve a problem, not the reverse. And so we partner with stakeholders to help us through those decision-making processes and hopefully make the right choices with consideration given to all of the many tools we already have in place. So we're not, at the very least, we're not adding or duplicating solutions that aren't fully optimized.
Yeah, I used to explain this to people by saying, have you ever moved from one home to another? And they'd say, yes. And I'd be like, you know, when you went to move and you're like, we probably don't need this anymore. We probably don't need this anymore, whatever. I'm like, that's rationalization. And invariably somebody would say to me, are we going to a smaller data center? It's like, no. We're going to a less complex, the boxes, complexity and attack vectors. Like we need to reduce complexity within the environment. We need to reduce the number of attack vectors in the environment. Therefore, anytime we can reduce those things, it's like moving into a new house. And so if we can reduce applications and those kinds of things, it reduces integration points and whatnot. I just throw that out. Every now and then I feel like sharing things that have worked to explain these things for me.
Right? Yeah, clean out the basement. And the time we're in healthcare lends well to this, quite candidly. Been a challenging time with enormous financial pressures. Really, I think the last couple of years in particular was really macro and micro forces applying lots of pressure to us and our operating margins, not unlike other hospitals across the country. I think we've all sort of struggled through this. And we have the good fortune culturally and organizationally of viewing technology as an enabler and part of the solution to tackle some of our financial challenges, again, gains in efficiency, productivity, workforce, and the like. And I think we just really have to look at technology with an even more critical eye than perhaps we have historically, understanding the value and potential ROI are decision points, but they really haven't always been as emphasized as they are now. And so something that we're focusing on and something I think we need to continue to build discipline around.
Craig, we haven't talked about AI, and every conversation I have now talks about AI. And I interviewed Chris Ross this morning with Mayo, and we were talking about AI and just the velocity of it. It's like upon us, like every day somebody's coming in saying, hey, we can apply it to supply chain. We can apply it to coding and billing. We can apply it to some of these clinical care settings. The velocity of it to me is really incredible. How is Cedars approaching AI? What are some areas where you're currently using AI or projecting to use AI?
Yeah, thanks. We made it to 30 minutes, give or take.
I know. Well done.
Without focusing on it. That's interesting. And I think everything you said, I'm certainly feeling as well. And watching TV the other day, there was a commercial for a washer dryer now with AI. I don't know. I think it's probably still just telling us that the sheets are dry, but there's certainly an advertising spin to it. We've been using AI for years, mainly in the category of rules-based and machine learning. We've deployed lots and lots of predictive analytics solutions, readmission risk, surge prediction, census, patient deterioration, length of stay, identifying heart failure, risk of cardiac arrest, predicting whether mom's going to deliver by a C-section. The list goes on and on. I think it's really the generative AI explosion that's really just raised the public consciousness around this. The reality, though, is we're still working on similar problems, whether it's a generative AI solution or whether it's a rules-based machine learning or some other just programmed algorithm. There are problems around capacity, flow, monitoring and alerting, progression of care, readmission risk, and some of the administrative functions you mentioned. How do we better automate supply chain, staffing, scheduling, financial solutions to predict either to process claims or to predict denials, prior auth, and so forth. And so I think we're leaning into generative AI solutions where it makes sense. We're continuing to use machine learning and other predictive tools to build upon what we already have available. I think some of the areas that we're focusing on, as I mentioned, for 24, feeling pretty bullish about ambient documentation tools. It feels like those tools are previously, I guess, in some cases called digital scribe, with the generative tools overlaid on top of that now. We feel like those are in a place where they're finally ready for prime time. And so we're piloting a few of those vendors to understand what technology may be best suited to our workflows and primary care and specialty, and whether there's any differentiators there that we should be paying attention to. So excited to see what that looks like, and maybe even applying those solutions beyond the physician. How can we help nurses navigate flow sheets and care plans with some of these tools and hopefully spend more time looking at the patient and focusing on the patient and less behind the glowing computer screen? We're also moving forward with, as I mentioned, the remote monitoring and the virtual solutions, perhaps some centralization of admit and discharge workflows. We're supporting the native solutions that Epic is rolling out, in-basket drafts, which I think now they're calling augmented response technology, AR chart summaries, and other technologies that Epic and some of the other big vendors are doing, Oracle and the like. We're piloting Copilot. We're piloting Microsoft Copilot. And that's been fun. I'm one of the pilot users. So it's been fun to sort of be in the feedback loop. And
so do you have it responding to emails now for you?
Yes, although nothing is automated, I think, in the category of that. Nothing is fully automated, so much so that I can't look at it before anything goes out. I think.
Chris was saying to me, sometimes he gets these really lengthy emails, like it's just a long chain, and he's able to say, summarize the top 5 points. And it goes, boom, and then he's able to go, oh, okay, I know what this is about, and he's able to respond.
I think it does a few things really well. What you just described, it does fairly well. So I could be looped into an email thread that has been going on for 5 days, and they say, copying Craig for such and such. And I can click summarize, and it does a decent job of summarizing sort of the essence of the email and a handful of bullet points. I think that it does really well. The other thing it does really well is, although with some perhaps risk that we need to sort through, it captures, if you record a meeting, it will do either a transcription and or a meeting note summary. There's sort of a general notes and there's an AI notes. The AI notes are really great. They summarize things beautifully. And then you can actually click on a segment of the note if you recorded the meeting. And it will take you back to the portion of the meeting recording where that happened, and you can sort of replay. And you know, the risk I mentioned is I think we need to sort of understand what that means from data retention. In terms of email responses, it works reasonably well. What's interesting, it you can either have a generate a response and you can accept or reject, or I think it's like three options. You can also have it as like an advisor or a coach, where like you're writing an email and then you can ask it for input. And it'll say, well, I think that tone is a little abrupt, or it's too directive. You should have a better introduction. And so it has a way to sort of educate you, I guess.
Yeah.
What I was really hopeful about with Copilot, that I think it has some maturing to do, is I was hopeful, and again, maybe it was just too much of an imagination on my part, that it could mostly create a PowerPoint for me. And with take this Word document and create a PowerPoint, and it does it, but it doesn't quite do it with a lot of extra massaging and editing. So I think all of that's going to mature in time. I think this is a great start. The tool is really great, I think, out of the gate, and it'll be exciting to see how it continues to evolve. But it's been fun to experiment with, for sure.
Well, Microsoft's not a sponsor of the show, so I will say this. I hear a lot of pilot conversation. I don't hear deployment conversation. And I think we're getting to the point, and I'm not going to ask you to comment on this because I'm not going to get you in trouble, but I think we're getting to the point where these cloud things are killing us, $20 per user per month at a time. And we've got to be careful when we're implementing these tools to ensure that we're going to get the ROI on these tools. That's why I think we're there. Let me give you a closing question. And that is, talk to me about balancing innovation, because we talked about innovation and all the other, the day-to-day stuff that goes on. How do you balance that? How do you keep your team focused on the thing they need to be focused on at the right time?
Gosh, that's a great question. I don't know if I have a crisp answer. I think part of it, it's intertwined. It's not binary or one or the other. I think innovation can happen even in all the little ways that the day-to-day continues to sort of happen and be served. All the things that people do as part of the routine, I think we have to ask ourselves periodically, why are we doing it this way? Isn't there an easier way to do it? Couldn't I speed this up by fill in the blank? Or do I even need to do this at all? You might call that innovating. And so I think there's a lot of ways that innovation can happen within the minutiae of the day-to-day. And that would, again, be in the category of the care and feeding and, again, the lower levels of our sort of our hierarchy of needs as an organization. But then there's the innovation that builds upon all the foundational pieces and some of what we've talked about today. All of the work we've done over the past 10 to 15 years to build out robust EHRs, now overlaid with these generative tools, that's really, I think, a time of great potential to finally take advantage of the amalgamation and the way in which we've pulled all of that data together in these central sort of repositories to solve problems, to gain insights, to make things easier for our physicians and our caregivers across the organization. And so, you know, I think it's always going to come down to striking a balance, to your point, of what can we spend time on and what gets resourced and what doesn't. And I think some of that is a bit science and some of that is a bit art. And sometimes we're willing to experiment with things and be adventurous. And I think it's that adventure that sort of pushes us forward to new spaces of innovation that haven't already been tested.
So Craig, you've been in the chair for 3 years. I guess this is my last question. Anything surprise you about actually being in the chair of the CIO? Like now that you're actually in it, you're like, this is a little different than I thought, or this is... or some aspect of it that surprised you?
That's a good question. I think I expected most of it. I think where I spend more time than I probably would have anticipated, just because I wasn't exposed to it as much, is really more in kind of some of the health policy pieces that I think of interoperability. And I often am pinged about sort of legislative things that are coming forth either nationally or in California. And like, well, what do we think about this? And helping advise like the hospital associations on various topics of interest. That's not something that I guess I predicted or expected, but it's something that takes up a fair portion of time. It's fun. And reading through, I need a co-pilot to summarize legislative proceedings in some cases, but I think that's been something that I guess I probably wouldn't have anticipated.
Well, yeah, you not only stepped into a leadership role at Cedars, you actually stepped into a leadership role in healthcare due to the nature of who CDERS is in their place in healthcare. So yeah, it's really interesting to, you will be sought out by a lot of people. It's interesting. Craig, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for sharing your wisdom with the community. Always appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for listening to this week's keynote. If you found value, share it with a peer. It's a great chance to discuss and in some cases start a mentoring relationship. One way you can support the show is to subscribe and leave us a rating. Love it if you could do that. Big thanks to our keynote partners, Quantum Health, Gordian, Dr. First, Gozio Health, Artisite, Zscaler, Nuance, CDW, and Airwaves. You can learn more about them by visiting thisweekhealth.com/partners. Thanks for listening. That's all for now.